Okay, Shavuot everybody, Kavach. So nice to see everybody on a Motzei Shabbos. This is what I want to do, and this is, you know, I have the an amazing schos to give a number of shrimp during the week, so I got to make sure it's different, right? I promise it'd be different, it'll be a little the same, a little different. We'll change that up a little bit. Okay, here's what I want to deal with. Some of this is going to be like, you know, Judaism 101, which is good, because those are sometimes things that we always have to review. And some of it, hopefully, will be Judaism 102. We'll find out. You'll let me know afterwards what you think. And I'd like to actually begin with a very fundamental question. And that is, we know that there are many names of Hashem. There's the name, actually, the Daf Yomi for today. I don't know, like a lot of people, you know, the Daf Yomi now, it's brachos. I'm trying to keep track. So the Gemara today actually mentions the context. I'm not gonna explain, but they talk about can you say the name of Hashem? Can you say the name of Hashem? Meaning, can you say you're learning? And the context of learning, are you allowed to say the name Elohim? It's the context of God. So it's clear based on the Gemara that you're definitely allowed to. And there might even be a violation based on a pasuk in Devarim that if you don't and you say Elohim, it's referring to God, it's a violation. It sounds like you're referring to perhaps you're scoffing at the name of Hashem, which is interesting. It's not the traditional way of learning. Generally speaking, when you learn, you'd say Elohim, you don't say Elohim. Anyways, that's like the interesting comment. But okay, I'll stick to the more classic way. Hopefully it's right, and if it's not, I ask forgiveness from God. We know there are many names of Hashem. Baruch Baruch Hu knows by different things. In the Torah, I'm referring to. Not like a makom, that's added much later, right? Makom, like go to a Shiva house makom, right? You know, that's much, much later. Shalom, right? Also, names right later. So, the same way that everybody has different names. So, for example, I have a name called Aaron. Or if I want to be from Aaron, right? That's the second way of doing it. Some people call me brother. Only my sister does that. Some people call me uncle, my nieces and nephews. Some people call me Abba, my children, right? Sometimes if my son wants to be cute, they'll call me Tati, right? I think this is from or something, I don't know. And then the other names, right, can be Rabbi. Other names could be, you know, the person that's like me, hey you, right? You over there, right? Everyone's known by different names. So the question is, what's the proper name? So the proper name is the name that was given to you by Avivimo, by your parents. That's your proper name. What about other types of names, right? So that is also true when it comes to Hadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, it's not a contradiction. You can have more than one name because there's more than one facet of who you are depending on the relationship. So my children have a different relationship with me than my sister or my mother, right? Or my nieces and nephews, or you guys. So you refer to a person often, it's very much based on a relationship. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So when you refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Yud Kei Vav Kei, so that is the only proper name of Hashem. That's like Aaron. That's like first name basis, right? Yud Kei Vav Kei, right? Everything else is a kinui. Everything else is like a nickname. So what's a kinui of Hashem? Hashem? So Elohim, Tzvakos, right? All those Shakai, right? All those are, according to some opinions, Ekesher, Eke, right? Another kinui of Hashem. Those are all kinui of Hashem. Now, why does that matter? It matters because what's the relationship, right? So I understand if it's Abba or Dad, right? Or Uncle. I understand the relationship. It's obvious. It's language that we speak. But what about God? Right? Like, what about God? What's the relationship with God? And this is even more confusing because, like, I know nothing about Judaism. You know, I know there's Judaism, and you know, religion, there's only one God, and I'm familiar with that. And I decide to open up the Bible, the Chumash, for the first time, and I start reading, right? So I say the word, you know, Bereishis, okay, Yeldar. Okay, that means, you know, in the beginning. Fine. Bara. Okay, created. And the third word is Elohim. I know very little about Torah. I know a little bit about Ivrit. So one thing I know that in Ivrit, if I want to talk about Lashon Rabim, plural. Remember those like great 4 days? You know, to like conjugate words, right? Plural, singular. So what's plural? Plural usually ends with a Yud Mem. So you look at this word and you're like, huh? Plural? Gods? Whoa, that's like a little scandalous, no? That's like trending on the heresy a little bit, right? What do you mean? Does that ever bother you? Right? The name of God is Lashon Rabim. What are you talking about? That's you know, not very from. What? So how are you supposed to understand? So the truth is, or this Chumash doesn't have this. Very important, Ramban. The Ramban of Chumash says, defines. What is the word El, and why is it plural? Now, the word El, and the word Elohim for that matter, does that have to mean big G? Answer? No. Give an example of when it means little G. You know, by the way, you know what I mean by big G, little G? Okay, good. What does little G mean? What's little G?
Idols.
Right? Little G means idols. I'll give you an example. It's in the Decalogue, the Sefer Devarim. What do we say? Lo yelacha Elohim acherim al panai. Elohim acherim is referring to foreign gods. That's not referring to big G, that's referring to little G. And in fact, it's spelled G-O-D-S. Isn't that interesting? There, Elohim acherim is lowercase g with an S. The third word in the Bible, that is not going to be with a... That'll be with a big G, it's a proper name, and it's not going to be plural. That'll be apikorsis, right? Well, I don't understand, it's the same word. Is that, you ever think of that before, right? So says the Ramban, what does the word Elohim mean? So you have to understand what the word El means. What's El? What? It means a power. So, oh yeah, we did this, right? You spoke with this, right? See, I told you a few things. Okay, fine. Some things are good, you know, whatever. When you have like a pony trick, so you gotta repeat the pony trick. That's all it is. So, Shehei Mishtachavim, they bow down to Lahevel Varik, to vanity, to nothingness. Umishtachavim, and they prostrate themselves, they bow to El. Let's make a difference in a segel and a tzeres. Very important to the distinction, which we've kind of lost a little bit. We got our segels and tzeres a little bit mixed up a little bit, right? But segel would be El, which would be two. El, which would not mean big G. It would have to mean little G, referring to a power. So an El just means a power. Havul Hashem b'nei Elim. What are b'nei Elim? Answer, not the sons of God. But there's powers. We've heard the power. El is a power. All El is a power. Now, context. Sometimes El could mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes it could also mean a foreign power. Right? Does that make sense? That's like really important, right? Otherwise, you're like, what's like, you don't understand what's going on in Torah. You don't understand Chumash. You don't understand anything. So these are you know, fundamental aspects. I told you, this is just 101. This is not 102. This is 101, right? This is basic. So, when we start, when we appreciate this, it's really important. That's why, by the way, sometimes the word Elohim can also mean other things that I'm sure you're familiar with. Like, besides God, it can also mean, or God, right, the small g, it can also mean, no, you know the answer to this. What else could Elohim mean? V'gisho Adonav v'hal Elohim. Well, v'gisho Adonav v'hal referring to an Eved Ivri. What are you taking Eved Ivri to? With the judge, with the court, right? So it says in Shmos, V'gisho Adonav, the master takes a slave, El Ha Elohim, to the court. So, another place, Brishis. What's it say? No one ever, this person never gets there. What does it say in the end of Sefer Brishis, right at the end? Very, very difficult pasuk that the Rishon spent a lot of time trying to figure out what it's referring to. But it's very important. What's this pasuk? Here it is. Previous page. Here. I read from Perek Vav. Vayir'u v'nei ha'elohim es b'nos ha'adam. B'nei Elohim, the sons of, probably referring to sons of lords, sons of power, sons of, you know, probably referring to noble, the children of noble men. That's probably referring to. So the word Elohim doesn't mean, it doesn't have to mean big G. You follow? It could be Lashon Chol. It could be just a vernacular, just a regular word. It doesn't have to mean, again, it depends on, by the way, why is it so important? It's very important because if I'm a Sofer, which I'm not, but if I was, you need to do, anytime you write a Sefer Torah, you have to have Kedushas Mitzvah Sefer Torah. But there's an additional Kedusha that you need to do called Kedushas Ksiv Hashem Hashem. Before you write the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to have an additional Kavana of Ksiv Hashem Hashem. So you got to know, is it Shem Hashem or is it Lashon Chol? That's a big deal, right? You have to know. Okay, that's just an aside. Also, fisting, yeah.
So then why can't you say that?
Okay, so that's a very good question. Why can't you should and you shouldn't say that. Rav Moshe Feinstein says you shouldn't say oh my G, right? Okay, because that could be referring to when you say G, it's referring to could be referring to la la right, big G. So yeah, okay. We haven't started. That was just an introduction. Second. It's okay because it's very helpful because the clock in this room is facing the rabbi, so it's good. I can see it. It's straight. It's right there. Not a problem. It's a time of clock, it looks like. So it's really very precise. Okay, good. Now, let's continue. Why is this important? I mean, this is important for many reasons. This is why it's important for this week's Parsha, which I want to highlight. So again, just to reiterate. I understand, I think, Yudke Vavke is referring to the actual name of Hashem, like the proper name. When it comes to Elohim or El, that's referring to a Kino Hashem Hashem. Now, what's the relationship? So, this is very, now, what's the relationship? Always tell you, what is the difference between Yudke Vavke and Elohim? What's the difference? The ever like rattles off ladies with the seminars, the rattles off their mouth, right? Rachamim indeed, it just rattles off their mouth. Always, like guaranteed, right? Yes. Now, if you went to a seminary that maybe, if you went to Mechala, and you had my daughter, it's okay. And if you went to Mechala, so then you'll maybe, other seminaries, ulai, but Mechala you're probably more likely, and other seminaries, for sure. If you had a teacher who's a student, Rav Soloveitchik, you might hear a different answer to that. But Adam 1, Adam 2. Anyone I'm referring to? Bracious Paragolf, Bracious Paragbeis. You're talking about. Okay, all right. But there's another difference between the two of them. See, the problem with saying Din and Rachamim is that you don't actually know what you're talking about. I'll tell you why. Because Din and Rachamim. Well, okay, great. Prove it. Why is that? So this is the reason for it. You see why this is important. Perek Aleph in Sefer Bereishis is only one name of Hashem. And that's the name of? Elohim. Well, you know, I just read it, right? When does Yudkei Vavkei begin? Perek Beis. Now, if I want to be a heretic, I'd be like, oh, very good. Like, it doesn't require being like an academic university professor. You read Perek Aleph, you see one name of Hashem. You read the second Perek, beginning in Perek Pasuk Dalet, you see Yudkei Vavkei. You're like, oh, two different gods. And is that so crazy? That's not so crazy. Like, isn't that weird? Also, the Torah begins not with Yudkei Vavkei. I just told you that's a proper name. Imagine I write a book about a guy and I only tell you his name in chapter 2. That's not normal. This is still Judaism 101. 101.2. Right? Perek Aleph talks about nature. That's called Bria Solomon. Does nature have Rachamim or is nature Din? If it's raining outside, does the level of righteousness of the individual matter? No, they'll still get wet, right? If it's minus 20, and you take care of the poor and the needy and the orphans, and you're very righteous, it's still minus 20 for you. You know, minus 20 is minus 20. Nature's very cruel. You know, when a lion decides he's going to take a cheetah and devour it and rip it apart in front of its entire family, no one says that lion is the most immortal creature in the world to be put in jail. No one says that when spiders make webs to trap mosquitoes, No one, you know, says that spider, it's trapping, it's, you know, it's doing something illegal, it's not allowing the freedom of the bugs to fly, you know, it's like putting, right? So we don't, in the world of morality doesn't apply to the world of nature, because it's nature, right? Animals, there's no morality that comes in nature, right? That's what's referring to, that's why it's deen. You follow? Does that make more sense now? That's why nature is cruel. Nature's cruel. Diseases are terrible. Cold weather is miserable. Last night I walked in the rain. It was wet. It was I was soaked. Right? And this dinner last night, I was wet. Okay? So we have to put it to nature, right? It's not, oh, because you're such a tzaddik, there's like, you know, like those pictures, like in cartoons, right? There's like, you know, it's dry right above the person's head, right? There's no rain there. Okay? It doesn't work that way. That's not the real world. Okay? And walk in between raindrops. It doesn't work that way. So nature is very cruel. That's Perek Aleph. Perek Beis begins something in Bereishis, which is totally different. And that's in Perek Beis, we see that Rosh Baruch Hashem speaks to Adam. Because the commandment, he speaks to him, there's a relationship. That relationship is Perek Beis. That's why Yekevavke is referred to also Rachamim. Why? Because you have a relationship with somebody. I know you. I have a relationship with you. I know your name. I know who you are. We speak. We have commandments. We have expectations. That's relationship. That's why it's referred to as Rachamim. Okay, does that make a lot of sense? What is with this? Okay. Make more sense. Fine. Good. Now, we're going to take it to a different level. That's where these sources come up. Take a look in front of you. I left out the first pasuk. I don't know why I did that, but I did. So I'm going to read it to you here. Beginning of this week's parsha, they read this morning. You're still allowed to learn like this week's parsha. You still get, if you make a doubt till Tuesday, you can talk about the parsha until like at least Sunday, maybe Monday, right? Okay. So, Vedeber Elokim al Moshe. Now, the truth is, this requires a tremendous amount of explanation. Why is it referring to, imagine this, right? Elohim says to Moshe, and what does he say? I'm Yekevavke. Now, again, if you're trying to tell a story, you know, let's use a different name. Says the God of nature, the judge, to Moses, and he says to him, I am God. What does that mean? Why is he switching names down on this puzzle? I don't want to get into it right now. It's actually connected to what happened before. But maybe based on what I'm saying, you can help resolve that pasuk. But you understand why it's complicated? You see, this is why, if you know, by reading Chumash, you ask a lot of questions, which is good. You have to make sure the answers are proper. Okay, Vayera, here we go. I appeared to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Bekel Shakai. I appeared to them in Kel Shakai. I don't know what that means. Replace it. Okay, so El, at least I know a little bit. Now, Shakai, the Gemara says, Sha'amar lo ulamo dai. So what's Dayenu? Dayenu means? Enough. I think I spoke about Dayenu last time I was here. Okay, I remember that, actually. It was March. I came here March last year. Yeah, I did. It was before Pesach?
Oh, yeah, because you gave the same share.
Yeah. I only know four things. That's just like... I can't speak. That's why I have to. I can come back in 4 years. So, what's interesting about this language? So, dai sha amar lo modai. So, dai in this case, and you'll see why it's connected dafka to the word el, because you'll never see other names connected to shakai. You'll never see that. And the reason is dai means enough. And the reason is because when God created the world, you all had to say enough. Why? Because if God creates too much, there'll be no space for human beings. And if God sometimes needs to rein in the way he created the world in order for the world to exist. So, we'll leave it for now. We'll come back to this a little bit later. Ushmi yokevavke lo nodati lahem. So, again, if I read this, I don't understand what I'm saying. The Avos only knew God, Kel Shakai. And the Avos didn't know God, yokevavke. Really? I look over the Chumash, I see yokevavke a lot of places with the Avos. So, what do you mean they didn't know me? So, very, very strange. It's strange on many different levels because it's not true. It's simply not true. And two, what does it even mean? So, because I still want to somehow manage to get the three other things today, I want to jump, flip the page, please. Right in the middle, there's a pasuk from Bereishis. And this pasuk is extremely important in understanding what I think the Chumash is trying to tell us. So again, remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe that the Avos only really, I appeared to them, they only really knew me as Kel Shakai. But Yogiv Avge, they didn't know. Oh, why is this important? Because now what's going to happen? I'm going to reveal myself, the Yedu, Ki Ani Hashem. So now, because only now in Israel will people know God as Yogiv Avge. Up until now, they only knew as Kel Shakai. But Yogiv Avge, it's going to start now. That relationship, whatever that means, starting now. Hasn't existed before. Because then something means. Here's the answer. Take a look in Memchas, it's precious Memchas, in Pasuk Tesvav. So this is Yaakov Avinu speaking to Yosef before he passes away. Vayivarech es Yosef vayomar. Gives a bracha to Yosef. Here we go. Ha'elokim asher hisalchu avosai lefanav. Elokim. Now, this is a hard one. How would you translate His halchu avosai lefanav? How would you translate that phrase? His halchu. They walked with avosai lefanav. So God, what did God do? God walked with where? Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Sorry, I don't mean to slight them at all. Abraham is in Yaakov. Where's God? So we'll pretend. At least make God more chashev, right? Which one is God? Where's God? Where's God? Asher halchu avosai lefanav. Where's God? Who's first? The avos or God? Look, read the passage again. Asher halchu avosai lefanav. So therefore, that means that God's in the back, because who's in front? The avos. By the way. Hisalech lefanai veyesamim. Who's in the front? Avraham. God's in the back. Okay, you follow? You follow? This is very important. So here are the avos, and here's God over here in the back. I still know what that means. I don't know what it means that God's in the back. Right? But that's okay, because this pasuk continues. What's really important about this pasuk, and a lot of psukim do this. Sometimes psukim, they write in what's called tikboles. You know what tikboles means? There's a fancy English word, and it's called like, not fancy English word, it's called balance. Like, it's like equal. It's like, you know, a repeated twice. There's X and Y, but they're really the same. I mean, they're trying the same thing twice. Right? It's like a poetic way of speaking. So, look at this definition. Here we have a definition. Ha-Elokim, here we go again. Ha-Ro-E-O-C, Ma-Odil Yomazah. Who shepherds me? Ooh. What do we see from here? That by God standing in the back, he's like being a shepherd. Now, here's something which I don't expect anybody to know, because I don't believe on the weekend you do too much shepherding. You know, I don't believe you do so, right? Although someone just told me that it used to be in the 90s, if you would, even though I live in Thornhill, and I guess it used to be shepherding if you came to Thornhill, you know, 40 years ago, but even in Yerushalayim, you had Yerushalayim, you know, only 30 years ago, I know this sounds crazy, your place is, I was just in Israel the first time in 18 years, the end of November. The Mila Mall did not exist, the whole area was empty. Empty, and that's not shocking, right? Can you believe it? There was no, like, Kofix, didn't exist. It was like, there was no fast trains, nothing. People walked, there was no, but, right, the whole city was different. You would see sometimes sheep. Not that old. 20 years ago, you walked down Yerushalayim, not like, you know, like Yafo, right? But you walked down the old city, you walked down the areas where next to the old city that was totally empty, the whole mamilia were just empty fields. Empty fields, right? Should have bought land. And it was, and you know, it was like a dip, you know, shepherding. You used to be able to stay in place in Yerushalayim and you'd see sheep. It wasn't so, you know, now they're filled with buildings and apartments or whatever. But it was like literally the hilltops next to totally empty. Empty, filled with valley and sheep. But that's not the world we live in today. And what does a shepherd do? So let me explain something. So a shepherd goes from behind. But shepherds never go. How come shepherds don't go in the front of sheep? Because if they do, and they say like... Here you go, blank stare. Kind of like me. Very similar to the stare when you teach teenage boys. Exact same stare. Right? Same stare. Sheep and teenage boys. Exact same thing. So, what do you do? How do you move sheep forward? So, you go to the back. But,
Is this like Manhattan? What's going on? Is this like Upper West Side? Is it?
So how it works with sheep is that the... I'm going to put a card there, please, okay? How it works is that you take... Kleenex boxes. He's obsessed with Kleenex boxes. There are more Kleenex boxes than the table. What's going on? Like, everyone has like a runny nose or something in this place? Do you notice that? Every table. What, four people need a whole Kleenex box? Anyway, okay. So the shepherd, what he does is he takes a staff and he stands behind the sheep in the back and he gives it a little nudge forward. And this sheep then pushes the sheep and this sheep pushes it. It's like, you ever see the dominoes? Like, you press down, go woo, right? It's really neat. You ever see those, like, those videos? So, what, that's essentially what happens with sheep. So you take one, you push it forward, and eventually it tells the chevra, guys, let's go weiter. Let's like move forward. And if you're really skilled, what you need to be is a shepherd. That's a very easy one to go straight. If you want to head like on a curve, let's say you want to go here, you want to go like the water, which is down there. So pushing straight, they're going to go to, you know, who knows. So you have to like know what angle to hit this sheep so that it begins going this way and it hits sheep on the angle to figure out how to do it. It's like a chachma behind. It's not shepherding, just like, you know, do whatever you want. No, it requires a tremendous amount of skill. So if I were to interview, you know, I go up to the front sheep and I say, hi, Mr. Sheep. Do you know Mr. Shepherd? I go, Mr. Shepherd, I've never met the guy before. I said, why are you going this way? The guy behind me pushes me forward. Right? So I think that analogy is very important. Why? Because what is that analogy? The analogy is that's related to Avos HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course they knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course they did. But they didn't have a sense. If you take a look at Sefer Bereishis, there are no, like, overt miracles. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was hidden. If you were to live at the time of the Avos, and it wasn't this miraculous existence. Yeah, okay, Sarah has a baby. Sarah has a baby when she's old. I get that's pretty cool, right? But it's not. It's a different type of interaction with Baruch Hu. Sefer Bereishis is basically normal, you know, normal plus type of living. Right? There's no great, you know, you gotta dig for a well, and you have to fight battles, and you have to, it's, you know. But now what's gonna happen, the games are about to change. What's gonna happen in Mitzrayim? Yurkei Vavke. What is Yurkei Vavke? Yurkei Vavke is literally God's presence will manifest itself in Mitzrayim. And we say this at the Seder. Ze Gilui Shechina. Right? Literally, God's Shechina is being revealed in Mitzrayim. By the way, it's pretty amazing. The place of greatest tumah, God's Shechina is going to be revealed. And when we reveal God's Shechina, God's Shechina will be revealed. And that's exactly what's happening. Meaning, let's go back to this pasuk again. When it comes to the relationship that Avos had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's like Kel Shakai, like God's shepherd in the back, not necessarily overt. And now, says Hashem to Moshe, now... They didn't know me as Yurkei Vavke. Now everyone will know me as Yurkei Vavke. Ve'yidu kol Mitzrayim ki ani Yurkei Vavke. Ve'yidu kol Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Now the game's about to change. That's called the Makos. That's called the Yom Suf. And that's called... You follow? Okay. So that's what this pasuk means. That's very important, I think, understanding Yurkei Vavke. Much more this personal type of a relationship, right? So that's why when we say, we make a bracha, bracha ta Hashem Yurkei Vavke, right? Because that's the name of God. But he's also a Elokeinu Melech Olam. The moment we try to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we also feel that there's a much bigger picture to it. That's the idea of when it comes to a bracha. Now, we live in a world very much in 2020 and 5780, we live in a world of Kel Shakai, right? God is hidden. God's presence isn't that obvious, right? It requires effort, a very sensitive... Sen told me a very bad joke, right? It's 2020, it's a year of good vision, right? So, I preface it as a bad joke, so you can't get mad at me. The idea of the ability to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our life, it's very difficult. It's not easy. It's not, there's no Dam, there's no Tzfardiyah, there's no Kin, there's no Arav, there's no Barav, there's no Makar. It's much more difficult. But that's the relationship of Kel Shakai. But that's, we need to reveal Yurkei Vavke. How to reveal Hashem? Making a bracha over water, as we reveal Hashem, right? That's to make a bracha over foods that we eat. That essentially, by the way, that's what the end of Yom Kippur. What do we say? Hashem Hu Elokim. What does that mean? Hashem Hu Elokim. Of course, Hashem Hu Elokim. No, it means Yurkei Vavke, comma Hu Elokim. All the powers in this world, all the powers, everything out there. It's really Yurkei Vavke. You follow? That's what we're saying. You follow? It's very deep. That we think, you know, there's coincidence. There's, no, it's everything in Hashem Baruch Hu. Yod Kei Vav Kei is God's manifest, which is very hard. That is obvious, right? But that's what we're relating to. And I think I'll tell you why this is very important, because when it comes to the Makos, we all know it's a famous one. Why doesn't Hashem Baruch Hu just put the Egyptians to sleep and we can just all walk out of Mitzrayim? Forget that. First of all, landing will be much shorter, much faster, Seder will be faster, right? Very good. First Makkah. Right? By the time they wake, gone, we left. So much easier. And think about it. You know, no one has to suffer. Right? It's clean. One makkah, not even difficult. Why can't we do that? Oh, the other thing is, why does Paro let Bnei Yisrael go? Meaning, have Paro go to sleep. Why is it so important that Paro has to let our people go? By the way, Moshe never asks, let my people go. That's what Hollywood asks, right? Moshe asks for spiritual freedom. Let my people go serve Hashem in the desert for 3 days, right? That's very important. But why doesn't Moshe ask for let my people go? Hear this part? Do you hear this part? This is different. No, good.
Yes.
Okay? This is very important. It's very important, Rashbam. Rashbam says, imagine this scene. My name is Moshe, you know. Paro, I would like to take 2.3 million people to the promised land. Paro would look at him like, wait a second. You're going to take all the Israelites that are here across the Sinai to the land of Canaan. You smoking? Are you drunk? Are you intoxicated? How do you take 2 million people? How do you take 1,000 people? How do you take 20 people? How do you take 2 people across the desert? Especially if they're Jews. Well, it's too hot. I'm not going to run. Right? Wait. Is there a fan? Is there a bottle of water? Is there, right? Right? But how do you, it's not, across the desert to the promised land. What are you talking about? Well, Paro would dismiss them as a fool. No, you're a fool. So in order to get an entrance with Paro, you have to say, no, is it real? It's realistic. I'm just asking for a Shabbaton. Give me a Shabbaton. That's why he's asking for a weekend. Friday, Shabbat, Sunday. Give me a Shabbaton, right? Thursday, Friday, Shabbat. Probably Thursday, Friday, Shabbat. That's just give me a weekend. And we're just going to the desert. We'll come back. We'll slaughter some animals. We'll make a Shabbaton. And we'll come right back. Maybe, right? By the way, it makes sense, because after 3 days, that's when Paro chases them. Why? Because maybe he thinks they're coming back. Because that's all Moshe asks for. Okay, that's not now. That's Peshavach. So can't talk about now, B'Shalach, it's been a couple weeks. So, I mean, you could, but. So I think the, let's go back to what we asked before, because it's very fundamental. Clearly, the goal isn't to leave Mitzrayim. If the goal is leave Mitzrayim, how do the Jews go to sleep? What's the goal?
Serve Hashem.
So the goal is to serve Hashem, but what's my relation, but what about vis-a-vis Paro? Like, why can't, like, why can't I have the Egyptians go to sleep? Why can't the Egyptians go to sleep? Why can't I have Paro go to sleep? And this will also answer a question about free will, Paro's free will. Famous question, how could Paro remove his free will, right? It's not free will. What do you mean? Well, how could he harden his heart? What about free will? Is that what you're there for? Is that was our discussion? I think that's it. I didn't even mention that right now. I don't know that. But these are all these things are connected. Let me go back to the Makos, why it's connected. And Hashem Baruch Hu puts the Egyptians to sleep and Paro to sleep, and Bnei Yisrael walk out. So yes, we've accomplished one thing, and that's Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim. Great, but that's not good enough. Why? Paro needs to teach Paro a lesson, and by extension, the world a lesson, and everyone a lesson. Because Paro, this is Torah, this week, this morning. Yecheskel. What do we say in Yecheskel? I realize it's Torah, so like by that time, it's Kiddush Club, so people don't pay attention anymore. But it says, Li hayor v'ni yasitani, that Paro says, I am the Nile. I'm the creator of the Nile. I'm Paro. I'm the great leader of the Egyptian people. I'm the creator of the Nile. And if Paro is the creator, that means you call the shots, because you created the world. So you create the world, you can enslave people. Then there's no morality. Because you know what morality is? What I want, because I'm the creator. So I can say if I'm the creator that you're a slave and you're free and you're this and you're that. I can do that because I'm Paro. So if Paro thinks he's God, and then that means that morality is totally subjective and based on what Paro thinks is right and wrong. And Paro thinks might is right, and Paro thinks I can subjugate other people because that's what I can do, because I am Pharaoh. So Hashem needs to teach him a very important lesson. Okay, how the Malkos do it, that's for a conversation for another time. But the Malkos educate, or attempt to educate, because actually it fails, attempt to educate Paro that he is not God. He cannot do what he wants. So how come? So, anybody have siblings? So there's like, when you arm wrestle, I meant to say brothers, but maybe brothers too, I don't know. And when you arm wrestle, so there's two things, or wrestle in general, there's two things you can do. You can either beat the person, or if the person gives up, it's called a tap out. Tap out, and it's over. That's what happens when you have boys at home. So, how come, if Hashem is just wants to show that I am God, and I'm more powerful than fearless, and then goes, done. And what is, it's for death, right? And what's Paro going to do? Mercy, white flag, I give up. So then God doesn't accomplish anything. Because Paro gives up because of mercy. He doesn't give up because of moral reasons. So says the Sfarno, by hardening Paro's heart, now he can make a moral decision. Do I continue with my mission and my vision of being immoral and enslaving and treating people like pawns? Or you recognize that I actually sinned. But if Paro taps out and surrenders because he wants to say mercy, then what education? There's no education. All it is God is so strong and stronger. You don't learn anything. If I'm stronger than I beat you up and you give in, you're not learning anything. You're just basically saying, what? That I'm stronger than you. I give in because I'm weaker. But that's, there's no education. And the Torah is about education. God needs to educate. He's also mechanech. So therefore, he had to harden his heart in order so that he could make an educated decision. Do I continue on my ways, or do I actually recognize that? Now, Paro seems to say at some point in time, chatasi l'Hashem, later on, but that's not for now. But that's the idea behind it. So that's why it all connects to the Shemos of Hashem. Because Paro thinks he's the creator. He's the Elohim. He's the creator, right? So I need to teach him, educate him otherwise. How do you educate him? By showing that God is also Yuki Vavke. By showing that God really is Yuki Vavke, the power and the nature and God's presence is so obvious that would hopefully they do Mitzrayim Kin Yashem. Okay, that's the what happens in that's what's going on here. One more thing and then I'm gonna end. Because it's been already 40 minutes. There's pizza, there's I don't know, whatever, right? Pizza's coming at 9:45? Yeah. Okay, so, wow, I need more time. Even better. So there's four Makos, it's for sure I didn't do, on anywhere, because I said for the first time yesterday morning, a chat, so that's good. And there are four Makos that Paro turns to Moshe and says, a tirubiladi, meaning entreatment. I'll read them to you. I'll just read the first one. I'm not going to flip to all four. Four different times, after the Makkah hits, Paro turns to Moshe Aaron says, Hatiru el Hashem, Vayaser et Svaradim imenu me'ami, Veshbecha esa'am, Vayizbechu l'Hashem. You see? Vayizbechu, it's always because he thinks they wanted to do Korbanos, Hashabbaton. So what is Ha with an Ayin? Hatiru. What's with Hey Ayin Taf Yud Resh Vav? So that comes from the word. Oh, you know who does this? Who said that? I just heard it. I pretended to hear it. Rabbis actually do that. Pretend they hear the right answer. Even though no one says the right answer. Okay, here, right here. Vayatar Yitzchak L'Hashem. Do you see that word? Everyone can see it? Yeah? So what's Ayin Taf Reish? Davin. Very, to Davin. Very good. So, Davin. Sometimes I saw, look up in the English the other day, beg, entreat, you know, all these words for like begging or pleading, right? Go plead to God, go daven to God, go whatever to God, right? That's what Paro says. By the way, Paro actually says, he says, when you go to the desert, say mishbeach for me, right? Pray for me. That's what he says. So the four times where Paro turns to Moshe Aaron and says, hey, tir el Hashem. go pray for me, go daven for me, go beg for me, go four times. Four makos. This is amazing. It's very easy to remember. Acronym is etzba. Aleph, which is arba, tz, which is tzadi, which is tzardeah, which is what I just read to you. Bez is barad, and then finally, the aleph, the ayin is the arav. Four makos. Four makos, Paro uses that phrase. There are various conjugations to it. Why those four? So, I heard that Rav Meidan, Rosh Yeshiva Gush, he says very insightfully, he says, there's something common with those four makos. Those four makos affect Paro's house. And all four makos, which is very counterintuitive, because how does Barad, how does Arba affect his house? Take a look at the psukim, don't trust me, look it up. He actually says, Basecha, your body, it affects his house. When I said this somewhere, someone showed me that, in fact, the Racham HaKadosh says something very similar to this. Mentions the same idea, which is really nice. Paro, as a leader, did he care about his people? He didn't care about his people. This Monday is the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. And Hitler, who was so interested, and he had a mission. He had a mission and he had a vision. His mission was destruction of the Jewish people. Even though it was counterintuitive, instead of fighting the war effort, he knew that America and Russia were advancing. He allocated resources to ensure that Auschwitz would still be running. He knew that the war effort was in trouble. He was losing war effort. You would think he'd take all of his resources and allocate them towards fending off the advancing armies of Russia and America. But he didn't. Why? Because he cared about the destruction of Am Yisrael more than he cared about Germany and his people. Because right? You lose the war, it's going to affect the people. He didn't care. Paro is very similar. When did Paro also had a mission, an idea? Paro only cares and only asks Moshe and Aaron to daven, to beg, to plead, when it affects his basecha, his house. When he is personally, feels that it's like in his backyard, in his home. But it affects the, you know, dam, it affected the Nile, and it affected, you know, Muhammad and Cairo, but he didn't care so much. Didn't bother him. Because he doesn't care about his people. He doesn't care about that. If he cared about his nation, if he was a leader who really cared about his people, he wouldn't act this way, he wouldn't behave this way. He would have realized that he made a mistake, give up, recognize that you're not who you think you are, and allow your people to continue and to survive. Don't bring the destruction of Egypt upon yourself. Right? Upon yourself and upon your people. Recognize there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He refused to do so. He was Hitler. He had this vision, this mission, and he wasn't gonna budge. And that's the idea here. That Paro sees himself but when it affects his own house, then he asks to beg. If you contrast that to other Jewish leaders, Moshe Rabbeinu is the best example. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's told by Kadosh Baruch Hu, after Chet Egel, Moshe is told, Hashem says, I'll have to reset button. I'll wait about everybody. I'll start with you. Why not? What does Moshe say? V'chein ha-mesif ha-shar kadaf, erase me from your book. What? I want to, it's my ego. I want to start a nation. I want to start a people. Moselites or whatever, right? That's what I care about? No. I'm here to serve the people. There's no people, there's no me. I don't want any part of it. As a leader, I'm here to serve my people. As a figure, I need to shepherd my people, assist my people. I'm not here for myself. Paro just cared about himself. Moshe realized, of course, that it's not about him, but it's about the people. And I think in many ways that brings the destruction of Mitzrayim. That brings the understanding of the exact real function. Hi, how are you? Thank you so much. All right? Thank you. And that, I think, also allows us to realize exactly what is our mission and our purpose. Our mission and our purpose is v'yidu the world. That's our goal and that's our mission. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried to accomplish in Mitzrayim. That's what we need to do. Why? Because if we understand the that there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not that there's just a God who created the world, but there's a relationship. Like Perek Bey is in Chumash, where there's a Matzava and there's a Metzuveh. There's a person who commands, there's a person who's being commanded. There's a relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with every single one of us. There's a relationship that he's forging, that we have a mission and we have a purpose by recognizing God, lead to a sense of rachamim and how we relate to other people and seeing everyone around us that they're literally chelek eloka mimal, chelek eloka mimamish, so to quote the Baal Tanya, right? That every single one of us literally has a chelek or a baruch hu in them, and to recognize that, and therefore we're all here for a mission, we're here for a purpose, and we're here to accomplish incredible things. If we see that in other people, we'll treat them properly, we'll treat them better, and I think it'll make us, much who we are, better people, better Jews, in terms of affecting everything and everyone around us. And I think that's the ultimate message, as the message of Mitzrayim, as the message of Moshe, and Bezras Hashem, by being more cognizant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives, it'll truly be transform everything that we do and everyone around us. Latova. Shavuot Tov, everybody. Good luck. Thank you.